Hello everyone, I'm in Building 24 in Redmond on campus this week and visiting the team again, so I'm recording from here. Today I want to talk about the ESB. So I want to talk about where the ESB is, where have you hidden the ESB, dear Microsoft. Our team, I work on the Windows Azure team, and I work on Service Bus, so that is similar in terms of name, but there's a difference between the concept, the aspiration of an ESB, and what we build. We build something that moves messages around, and the ESB is much larger in kind of an aspiration. So I would like to talk about the differences here, and I also would like to talk about kind of the products that are being sold as ESBs, and kind of how much sense they make, or how they can deliver on the aspirations of that, kind of on the theoretical nature. I'm not going to go as low as to gonna start laying it in on the competitors, but I just want to talk about the notion of the ESB, kind of the architectural idea of the ESB, and how much sense that actually makes once you reach a certain scale. And before I do that with my own material, let me go and take a look at something that some other people are saying, and most notably here, ThoughtWorks. So in April, in April 2010, they have in their technology radar, which is a really good survey of and very focused survey, kind of every quarter of relevant technologies for the enterprise, mostly new technologies. They kind of had this picture. This was the last time that they actually really focused on messaging in the technology radar, and they had Enterprise Service Bus sitting kind of here, out here at hold. And if you pick up the latest technology radar from the ThoughtWorks site, you'll still find the Enterprise Service Bus kind of in that same place. And then we had Message Buses Without Smarts, which are kind of sitting here in the trial area. So Message Buses Without Smarts that are not trying to be clever, intrusive into messages themselves, but just move them, are in the trial category. And Enterprise Service Bus, even though that technology has been around for a while, are kind of in this whole proceed with caution, better don't use it category in the eyes of ThoughtWorks. It's a very interesting thing, and they also have a very interesting reasoning for this. And what they say is that ESBs actively undermine the reason for choosing the bus approach: low latency, loose coupling, and transparency. In contrast, we have seen considerable success with the simple message buses, where the integration problems are solved at the endpoints rather than inside a vendor's ESB system. Interestingly enough, because we're building a thing that doesn't have any smarts in it, so that it doesn't have transforms and it doesn't have a way to go and filter on the contents of the messages, we're seeing a lot of customers coming from that world and really echo exactly that sentiment. So that kind of prompts me to explain that and explain the differences and why we're seeing that. So let's talk about the ESB theory, which is kind of which is very beautiful. It's like My Little Pony, because it really is a lure, and that's something that a lot of people are find very attractive about the ESB. And that's certainly a fantastic sales pitch. So they have all these business functions. So we have marketing, and quality assurance, and warehouse, and packaging, and shipping, and accounting, suppliers, and purchasing, legal department, research and development, board of directors, all these different business functions with all their specific systems. And then you have all the common systems, the ERP system, databases, legacy applications, public web services, and they're all kind of put onto this message bus. They emit events. The other systems are reactive to events. You can post commands around. And the Enterprise Service Bus is kind of the central negotiation bus that makes sure that everybody can talk to everybody and that the systems don't need to be customized. And then you can go and take any individual piece of here and can take it out and replace it with another one. So the Enterprise Service Bus is kind of the grand negotiator, and it makes the entire enterprise flow and integrate flawlessly. It's a wonderful idea. The reality is that it's not a bus. the bus is something you can realize kind of on a conceptual level. You can paint this picture that we had previously. This picture is pure beauty, right? We tend in information technology, we tend to make things and worship things of pure conceptual beauty. And this certainly is one of those things. Ultimately, however, you need to go and implement that thing. A bus, the bus that we all have in our enterprises, is Ethernet and TCP/IP. All these wonderful functions that are layered on top of this need to be living somewhere. They need to be implemented somewhere. You first need to have a notion of messaging. So you need to have something that brokers messages, that manages them, that holds them, forwards them. You need to have a thing that does transformation. So you need to have some place where you can do all that computation, etc. So for that, you're being sold products that carry the name ESB. Those products are being sold for $25, $50, $100,000 per CPU, which turns them into non-buses, but turns them into hubs. Because if you're paying $100,000 per CPU for a product, well, let's make it cheap. Let's say $25,000 per CPU for a product. You're not going to go and buy a lot of licenses of that. Maybe if you are in a corporation where money is no obstacle whatsoever and you don't care, maybe you do. But most of us have better to do than throwing all that money out. So what happens is, per price, these buses, where the theory is so wonderful, shrink together into hubs, into a cluster of machines which are relatively close together, and for which we want to maximize the investments we put into those. So we're creating this cluster hub, where you have all those centralized places. That's the thing that we manage. That thing now has some natural challenges. For instance, scale out. Scale out becomes a problem based on price, because if you buy this package of technology, of which you will not use all the features, you're buying a huge bag of technology that's bound to a CPU, and it's in the ESB vendor's interest that you make more CPUs, that you use more cores to use that functionality. Well, then scale-up becomes something that is cost prohibitive per se. It's actually, you're interested in scaling this up into getting more leverage out of that single machine rather than scaling it out and actually turning it into a bus. So there's an incentive to stay with the hub model, which now turns into a single place that you need to get to. So connectivity all of a sudden becomes a challenge if you are a global operation. You need to get to that thing, you need to go back to that thing, which means now you're also up for some networking challenges, between the systems that want to connect to that ESB, and without anything that helps you in the middle. High availability, geo-distribution, disaster recovery become a challenge, because high availability comes with scale-out. So if you want to make the system highly available, it becomes more and more expensive because you need to run it on more cores. The repository, if you now go and put everything into that one thing, if that becomes your system, the repository becomes very complex and very loaded because it needs to know everything, and then of course all of that rolls up into a cost factor. So that's an interesting side effect of the product ESB. I'm not taking the concept and the pattern ESB, but really selling you a thing and making that thing, giving that thing the price point that those ESB products really have, which are affecting your architecture, because scale out, what is the smart thing to do yet generally if you want to achieve scale, becomes prohibitively expensive because every core, every CPU you add here is going to cost you very dearly. I'm going to contrast this with Windows Azure. Windows Azure is the thing what we build, it's our distributed system. If you use Windows Azure, you are coming to us from the outside. So we have a workflow service that ours is here. It's one of our workloads, so that's what my team does. We build Service Bus, and kind of from the outside you use our features. Then there's an inside relationship, so I want to talk about that only. How we build things. So we have a dependency on SQL database, we have a dependency obviously on networking, on storage, on compute, on access control. We have a dependency on very many of those services, and there's interdependency between all those services. And we run on in eight core data centers plus extra data center facilities. We have all these the feature services, the shared backend services, independent teams, well over 20 teams that are working here. We're shipping features and fixes into those data centers on a daily basis and very independent of each other. And we have in those data center facilities, we have countless feature clusters, hundreds of clusters that we go and update and deploy. There's external partners that we integrate with. And we have thousands of diverse workloads which are kind of sitting on top of that platform. So you'll argue, well, this is not a business system. But first of all, we have plenty of evidence from customers who are kind of seeing the same observations that I'm going to tell you here, but also we are in the end, we're sending you a bill and we're charging you for things, so we actually are running a business system. The business system just does not sell you you know, books or flowers, but it sells you compute services. But ultimately, we're running an enterprise system like everybody else does. The ESB, so I've just put the components here, which you will commonly find in such a thing, are also nice, kind of the capabilities that are being advertised. And the biggest advantage that's being advertised, or that's consistent, that I see consistently advertised, is central management. That you can actually sit in the middle and kind of govern and control and configure the flow of data through your enterprise. And all the systems that are kind of sitting at the leaf are being kept in check, kept under control, are being made to comply by ways of turning knobs on that ESB. So it has a number of capabilities for that. It has a routing capability, so you can go and send data from A to B, and you're sitting here kind of as the Grand Central controller on the trains and tell where data goes. You have transformation, the systems all speak their own lingo, and so here you have a place where you can go and transform that data. You have adapters that are sitting on top of this, which take the native formats and turn them into formats that are understood by the system, and then you can go and transform between, so you know, something comes in from this system and goes out to that system. And then there's orchestration, which implements business process, so it knows where data comes from one place and then goes to another place, and you wait for that data to come back and you go put that into another place, so it implements a document process. So you have that capability. Then as you do all those things, you have analytics that analyzes what's going on kind of in the middle, and you have governance that sits on top that kind of governs, enforces rules, quotas, all kinds of things over that entire amalgamated system. Clear advantages, so we're told, are centralized deployment and config of integration through adapters, centralized service governance, monitoring analytics, centralized management, information routing, orchestration transformations, centralized repositories for the management of shared assets, of common schemas, etc., etc. And central is good to a certain point. Let's go and investigate some of those benefits as we when we think about scale, and scale in some different dimensions. So first, let's talk about transformations. We have the central repository where all the schemas, all the data formats sit, and where the transformations sit. What I'm specifically talking about here is transformations of structured data, not transformations in the sense of rendering law and legal documents into particular different formats, which is unstructured data, documents really in the document sense of rendered free text documents. What I'm talking about here specifically is structured data information. Because I have all these transformations that are sitting here, and that you need to manage. If you allow any of these LLB systems that are connected to this, any of these workloads, to freely change, where you are indeed going, taking the system out and you're plugging another system in, and you are now in the central system on the hook to do those transformations, well then now, and you allow that to happen, well then you now need to go and manage all those transformations. Actually, an upgrade becomes a project where you need to go and touch all of the transformations that are sitting in here. And of course, that's a quality. You can see that at that point, right? All the other systems are being insulated from changes in one of those systems, you only have to go and change all those transforms. As you scale up, that become a lot of systems. So if you ask around and ask around what is the size of the implementation of an ESB, now how many applications have we integrated? The numbers are fairly interesting. The common enterprise will answer how many applications are you running, and the large enterprises are answering hundreds or thousands of apps that are being run, you know, server apps that are being run for all kinds of functions, and then ESB implementations often interconnect 4 or 5 or 6. Because it really, the transformation management, that central management becomes really difficult, and just a numbers game becomes really, really hard once you are actually onboarding more of those things, because it's an exponential challenge. The routing becomes hard once you enter the modern world. We have bring your own devices, we have devices, tablets, phones, obviously, which are a different animal than the web application or centralized application of yesterday. And we also have a trend towards driving engagement with customers through mobile apps. So now, if before the enterprise was priding themselves if they could support 10,000 concurrent customers, which were internal clients, now you ought to be proud of yourself if you are supporting 10 million clients. So that's a wholly different dimension of clients that need to be supported. Now, if you can support through a reasonable cluster system here the data flow for 10,000 employees, that doesn't mean it's the right architecture or the right choice for 10 million customers who you put a terminal onto their phone and let them interact with the backend system. You allow them to query their catalog. You're allowing them to interact with your systems. So do you treat that differently? Is that now a different thing in your system? Does that not run through this? And if it doesn't, why doesn't it? So what is this then doing, right? If you now build a thing that kind of sits here and then talks to the NLB systems directly, why are you having this? Geo-availability and failover, as I already said, that becomes hard if this thing is this costly, probably even appliance you put into one rack. How do you make that appliance geo-failover to a different environment? How do you do partitioning for failover between different facilities when you want to go and manage power outages, if you want to have high availability, if you want to have proximity, if you want to have low latency for Europe and you want to have low latency for the United States, but yet still want to have the same kind of central system. So all of a sudden you're now in the business of replicating all that data, because not all the products are actually doing that well in actually synchronizing that state. You're typically built at scale up systems, not with scale out in mind. So it turns out that a lot of the benefits of that central approach turn into weaknesses of the ESB approach as you scale up, and also as you scale across sites, as you scale across the world, and also as you onboard very many clients kind of in the mobile workload. So first of all, some very practical things: as you onboard more and more applications, you may run into versioning issues, distribution issues, release coordination issues, because, well, you're running one system that sits here and sits in the middle, that is a centralized thing, and you have to go and now swap out an adapter. How do you swap out an adapter? Is that thing hot swappable? Do you have to stop it? If you stop it, then who are you stopping that for? All of a sudden, are you making that thing unavailable? Is that thing actually capable of doing no downtime upgrades when you go and deploy code into it? Do you have to take it down? When do you take it down? Do you take it down on Sundays when the folks in the Arabic world aren't working? The more you make it centralized, right, and the bigger you make things, then the more it needs to be available. And so that's a hard thing. You can't make a central thing a single thing that is always available, or you make it really, really difficult, especially if you run code inside of it, if you have those adapters inside of it, and it's not built to kind of go and hot swap them and hot load them. Some of them systems have that, but many don't. Shared management. Now you have a shared management thing. You have the shared governance policies. Now if you scale things up, who owns the approval for governance policies? Who knows all those systems? Who knows what's right in governance? I have some words about governance a little later. Scalability challenges, already talked about that. How do you scale all this stuff out? How do you scale it out for, you know, the phones? And availability challenges, I talked about those too. So many of the advantages of that, doing those things centrally, become real weaknesses once you move to a world where you actually need to have scale, you need to have high throughput, low latency, through a system like that. Ownership is a huge thing. We work in our distributed system. We work in very many teams, over 20. I don't even know how it would work if we would have to go and sit down and kind of, you know, have the daily meeting between leadership to debate which goes and doesn't go into a shared repository or a shared governance store. Because the dynamic of the system is such that we do daily deployments and do daily changes. How would we deal with, you know, I'm putting a different new orchestration into the system that touches multiple systems, but that's not what the other systems want, right? I have a transformation because I have a schema update. Who's on the hook to do all the schema transformations? The other systems? I? A central team? What scale point matters? We want to have highly reliable back-end transactions, or we want to have super low latency flow through the system so we can satisfy the needs of, you know, millions of customers who are connected through our system and want to have quick responses. What scale point are we building this to? And if the guys who are needing transactional stuff, right, they pay for a smaller thing, and the guys who pay for the non-transactional thing pay for a bigger thing. And that's where you kind of have this big tool set that you pay with kind of into a big lump together thing, where you pay kind of on a fairly undifferentiated price point. That becomes fairly odd. The governance piece is one of the things that personally, this is my opinion, worries me. That whole notion of SOA governance or services governance as a centralized function worries me because it comes kind of with the notion of security and supervision and all that. But it can only work if this central thing here can actually go and see it. If you give that central thing the authority to go and look into every single message and reason about it, what does that mean for security? This system here, all these systems here have security policies. They have notion of who can do what and who is authorized to do that. And they have their own notion of security, and they have their own notion of encryption that are built typically, if you interact with the systems directly, so that they have a secure path to the user. Now you're taking that secure path away, and you kind of put this thing in the middle, which now can look into everything and hands off things kind of as the system itself. What happens with all these authorization policies that all these other systems have? That's something that is, it's a fairly odd thing. You're giving away security so you can go and watch things better. You are treating effectively your entire enterprise as a trusted subsystem so you can peer into things. For me, that's personally a worrisome concept from a security and authorization and also auditing perspective. You're also turning, the independence of services on its head, as the ThoughtWorks guy said, you also, personally, I think, turning the security story on its head with that. So, but theorizing, if we were using this ESB model for Windows Azure, let's say we had this central thing in the middle. So, because if the ESB model is really the it fulfills what this picture said that I had in the beginning, the Wikipedia picture, and really integrates everything in the enterprise, well, then it needs to be suitable for us, right? We have services that talk to each other. We have billing data that we fan out. We have all kinds of other information that we send between the services. Whether it's schematized or not schematized, actually doesn't matter. If I store data in our backend store in SQL, that's data. And whether that's a customer or a purchase order, or whether that's a policy that represents a queue, doesn't matter. So theoretically, the ESB model should be okay for us. What about latency? How big would this thing have to be so that it's equivalent to that direct path? It would have to be pervasive throughout the entire data center. Effectively, you know, every pair of nodes or every set of nodes would have to have an ESB node right next to it, which kind of is close to those things, so we can actually have reasonable latency. What is the data volume that needs to go through this infrastructure? The data volume, kind of, it would have to be able to operate at network capacity between any two points. How robust is it? Right. How high is the throughput can I achieve? How high is the scale? Because it would have to scale to our workloads plus your workloads that's sitting on top of it. And how agile could we be? What size would that have to have? What do these adapters, right? The adapter for Service Plus, what would that have to do? We change protocol. Does the adapter now go and, or we change functionality, we add functionality to the system, which happens all the time. Does that adapter now go and translate for everybody so we don't have to worry about any of our dependencies? It should. That's what the benefit is. Are some of these services special, right? Does SQL TDS, does that run through that thing? Does it also do schema transformations? And if not, why doesn't it? And who builds and funds this, right? Who runs it? We would probably not, because we don't want to be on the hook for managing all this. So who will pay for this? Is there a central place that does that? I don't know, because we don't operate that way. The way we operate is trust. The way we operate is autonomy and trust, and we believe that it's in each service's, in each service owner's best interest not to break things. So each service is autonomously run and managed and maintains what we call a gateway. So even if I had a legacy system in here, and we actually have systems or pieces in the overall system that were not custom built for this purpose, so they have an abstraction that sits on top of them that kind of translates outside traffic for internal use. So they have a modern interface that sits in kind of an older backend thing. So each service kind of has a gateway. The gateway provides a choice of protocols and protocol versions. So in Service Plus, we maintain and storage does the same, and all the services do the same. We have multiple protocol versions, and so far in Service Plus, we honor all protocol ever since we shipped in the beginning, like in 2010, January 2010, we honor all the versions in parallel. Each service dictates the canonical form for what it is responsible for. So for instance, the billing service says what the billing canonical billing format is, and we need to use that. But it also gives a guarantee about that protocol. So if the billing service changes protocol, they will clearly communicate to us when that changes, and they will honor the existing protocol in the progression of changing that protocol throughout the entire system. Will not instantly go and take it away. And the ingestion of foreign formatted content, so if you have a service that's speaking that's in here, then it's talking to, let's say, a partner, an external partner, then it's really at the discretion of the ingesting service what kind of protocol it honors and what version it adheres to. So that takes me to, you know, some lessons learned, things that we've learned over time while building the system that we built, and how that impacts kind of the thinking about this, the Service Bus notion and the central management notion. One of the things is, and that's something that we learned and kind of that we insist on, that nobody owns our services availability except ourselves. That's a very important thing. the central management thing actually lets you kind of off the hook from that rule. All of a sudden, if the ESB is not there, and if it's unavailable, if it has availability issues, well then your service is not reachable. You cannot be in control of your availability. All the work that you're putting in there is kind of pointless because that central thing is gone, or has a bug, or doesn't work right. So you're giving away kind of the autonomy to do a good job by, you know, let that central thing be the gateway to everything. But if it happens, so if you are on the hook for the customer relationship management system, and the central thing that sits there goes down, your service is down. So what do you do to make sure that your customer service relationship management system is up? Well, if you reduce the friction towards your service so you are in control of it. So that's what we try to do, is even if our dependencies go down, like say we're a service bus, so we have a hard dependency on storage, and in that case, mostly on SQL Server, or on the SQL database. If the SQL database experiences a blip, availability blip, it's our job to kind of make sure that we can work around that availability blip on one of our 5,000 or 6,000 databases. And if you see, if that actually shows through to you, then it's in your right to certainly come to us and say, hey, your thing's not available, Service Bus is not available. It's not in my right to come to you and say, well, yeah, but SQL is down. A services team cannot deliver on its obligations if it needs anyone's consent when and if to deploy any updates. If I had to sit down with anybody to go and sit in a committee and make sure I could go and deploy the adapter that I need, or you know, tweak a transform, I would never get anything done. I need to be able to go and react to changes, I need to be able to talk to a customer and deliver the right thing to them and also make changes in the entire system. I am on the hook to do the right thing, to give them the functionality that they need. A service team will underperform delivering on its obligations if it needs to pay a strategy tax on its internal implementation details. That's also something that we see, and that's something that we've seen over time, is that if I need to commit to, you know, route all my traffic through a particular strategic product that was chosen because of someone going to play golf with someone, that will typically, and not that that happens at Microsoft, just say, then I will typically suffer from this because it's not made for the purpose. So there needs to be effective liberty to go and choose whatever is right, and that might be that I'm choosing a protocol or choosing a protocol technique that might not be supported by the thing that is central, but where I have a where I need to have a specific technique to deal with a population, external population of 10 million devices which want to connect to me and continuously connect to me, well, 10 million at a time. Can I do that with that centralized thing? It could, possibly, but then I would have to go and fund the extension of that thing. So why pay a strategy tax there if I can do it better? And this is what this is the core kind of the discipline that leads to the solution. A service team can only ever be successful if there's commitment to ship protocol, because the ESB ultimately is about messaging and it's about protocol. And most of the features are really about, you know, either siphoning off data, or inspecting data, or making data digestible by other systems, kind of being a negotiator in the middle. And the assumption here is that you can't trust the endpoints, that you can't trust them to be stable. But you can't be successful if you do that. You can't be successful as a service if you change all the time. You have to commit to a protocol, and you need to keep it stable, and it's the job that you do. And if you are introducing a legacy system, and you own that, then it's your ownership to actually have a gateway, and that gateway sits in front of it, and if the underlying system changes, well, then it's the job of the gateway to make it look the same and actually support multiple protocol versions, because you're making a commitment to everybody else in the enterprise who consumes that. The ESB approach is actually the exact opposite. It doesn't trust the services to do the right thing, and What we believe, based on the experience of building that huge system, is that you must trust them. And it's really up to every team's best interest to support this. Which means the ownership becomes from centralized, it actually becomes distributed. You own your service top to bottom. You own the protocols and contracts, you own the gateway capabilities, you own all their backend roles and the internal implementation of it, and you own your schema and data. And you also own the authorization model and the policy and the security contract that goes into your system. You don't expose the data that you make a commitment on to keep private. You don't liberally expose that to other parties so they can expose it in the middle. If you have governance jobs to do, and we do, well, I'm on the hook to observe them in the gateway and report them if I need to. Right? We have a governance piece. The governance is billing. I will report dutifully what you do if you use my service, so we can appropriately bill for it. We have things that are quota, so you can overuse our system, overtax our system. That's also governance. We're on the hook for that in our own service, and every service has a different governance model, but it's trusting the system here. It's up to the service to actually do that. It's an autonomous unit. The team is autonomous, and the piece of software that it runs is also autonomous. Schema and data have a special role here. Local schemas and formats is kind of a little bit small to read. Each service has the sole authority over its own local schema for internal storage and internal data passing. You can't have one schema, like a single database, be shared between two services. If you have that, you have a single service. If you share data, if you share schema, if you make any third party responsible for your schema, you are running a single service. You're no longer running independent services. The service has liberty to choose the most appropriate local schema, and this is the key piece, it owns its availability through schema changes. If I have two services and they sit on the same data store and the same data schema, and now this service goes into the next release, the next version, it needs to upgrade. It needs to upgrade in place. The goal is 100% uptime. You make an SLA for 99.9% you want to have, but there's no downtime as you do an upgrade. You can't take the system down. No, you keep running. So keeping running, depending on how hard that schema change is an art form. But if you share the schema with someone else, if you share the database with someone else, you can't do jack to go and upgrade because you can't modify the thing for this service. So now you would have to co-upgrade altogether. Now you're running the same service. So you must not only, your schema is yours. You can't let the other guy peek and say, here's how I do it. Now you can go and have that schema, have my template, and use that. But you own the schema and you own the data. And you can't have anybody look at the data because it will put your availability in danger. Shared local schema means one service. There's canonical public schemas and formats. That's where you sit down with an industry or amongst yourselves in the same organization and say, here's the way we do billing. And the billing guys own that, but you sit together and you agree on it. It's not that you say, this is how it happens, but you agree on that. And that's perfectly fine. But that is distinct from the local schema. It's a separate thing. And there's foreign schema where you take a dependency. And you take a dependency on a particular version, you get a promise from someone else that that version will be supported. And as long as that is supported, you can use it. So it's your choice as a service owner which version of that foreign schema you want to support, and you get a firm commitment of how long that's going to be supported. That allows you to be autonomous and not to be kind of the slave and run after all the schema changes that they make. Firm commitments and standing by your protocol choices and your API choices is key to make a large distributed system work. Gateways. So these gateways, that's kind of where all that, this is where the ESP work kind of moves to. Instead of having a centralized place where you do those things, you empower the services to do that, and the services do that with a gateway. The gateway has a number of protocol heads for different protocols. So for instance, for service bus, we have SBMP, our TCP-based protocol, AMQP, and HTTP. Many services might only have HTTP protocol heads. Some might have a API protocol head over HTTP, and then they might have something that's more specialized, like a SignalR endpoint. And authorization and multi-tenancy and attribution of traffic, that happens here. Quota enforcement happens here. Usage tracking happens here. Everything that's common functionality for that service happens here. And there's nothing wrong with using shared infrastructure for some of those functionalities, but it is separate. I'll get to the shared infrastructure a little bit more on the following slide. That all happens in public network space. The talking to other services gateways, which have commitments, happens in public services space. And that's private network space here. And it's nobody's business how the shape of that internal system looks like. We might talk about it. For instance, the storage guys have fantastic papers which explain in very much detail how the storage services build up. But that's up to the service itself. It's its own internal business. What's external business is what you commit to out to the outside, to the edge of the public, at the public space. You make firm commitments there. So the roles are implement protocol, implement protocols, multiple versions. You provide service location abstraction, so you host the gateway, but the gateway may actually, this is the entry point to that service, but you might actually go and route it to a different data center if that makes sense. It's up to you how you implement that piece. You authenticate and authorize, and you treat externals like externals, and it doesn't matter whether they're friends or paying customers, whoever that is. You have a consistent story around that. Usage traffic attribution tracking, global and per client quota enforcement, connection and session management, load balancing, dispatch, and pass-through of requests to subsystems. That's the role, that's the pieces that you do in that gateway. Instead of having a central place, you now have a distributed place, autonomous services with these gateways that sit on top of them. And it turns out that gateway notion is something that we have kind of invented in 20 places independently. So that wasn't something that was given kind of as something that came from the bottom down, but most services kind of realized that they need to have some kind of a gateway of that sort to deal with versioning, etc. So it kind of grew out of all the places kind of at once. So there's the gateways. Very many of you will have an HTTP gateway, but there's multiple shapes. And this is where the external dependencies kind of blend in. Having that as part of your service doesn't mean that you are actually running and paying for the compute for it. You may go and employ some other service, some other technology piece to actually act for you as a gateway. And that's actually where the place where our service bus and BizTalk and where all the other technology pieces fit well. So for instance, if you have a protocol head, and that protocol head needs to take bursty traffic. It needs to take every hour, on the hour, 100,000 messages per second. And then during the rest of the hour, you go and process them, and then you get another burst. So you have reporting that happens out of sensors or things in the outside world. You want to have the temperature at a particular point in time, like at 12 noon, from all the sensors you have on the world. So you get this super bursty traffic. Well, the best thing to do that is to use a queue. And you could host your own gateway, your HTTP thing, and then go and put it into a queue, but why not to use the queue per se? So you could, in fact, employ our service bus, if you wanted to, as your gateway, and basically hand out the addresses of those queues that take the data, and hand them to the external clients and say, go and drop this information here. Use this protocol, and use this format to go and talk to me. So drop that off in service bus. That makes it nice because now your service here can actually go and pull the data out. There's nothing that ever stresses it because service bus, that external infrastructure that you use as part of your gateway, takes all the punishment. It takes all the traffic. And you basically just pull the data in. BizTalk. So now you're getting data in some EDI format. You get EDI interchanges. Well, you can employ BizTalk. You can go and run it. If you run in Windows Azure, you can go and install BizTalk on infrastructure as a service, and you can go and make a gateway where you use the BizTalk technology set for that particular purpose for your service. and go and implement EDI and EDI gateway for your service, but you're in control of the data that comes into your service. Yes, and if you want to have it as a single thing, a single implementation that can be shared by multiple services, that's okay. If you keep them separate, and if each service is still autonomous to go and opt out of that shared infrastructure and go and set up their own. And then, for instance, if a protocol had with SignalR, so SignalR, I'm calling this out because SignalR is very different from a normal web infrastructure because it wants to keep sockets alive. So you're going to make a gateway that has very little compute, but makes massive amounts of machines, which have a lot of memory, so you can put a lot of connections very densely on it. If you need to send, let's say, stock codes to, you know, hundreds of thousands of concurrently connected web clients. So you have a different kind of protocol head for here. So you can go build customized protocol heads, customized gateways for what your service really needs, and not have a central thing that only has, you know, a small choice of those things, but there's a broad variety of gateways that you can put in front of your service. Where really your service's job here, let's say SignalR, is to go and collect timing information from a sporting event and make that available to everybody in the world who's interested. Well, then you collect that here, that's your core functionality, and then you actually hand that off to the gateway, and the gateway's job is to make sure to distribute that and scale that out. And that's something that an ESB is actually not built for, suited for, thought of, but with a gateway infrastructure, actually much closer to that. So, summarizing, the web model of distribution works. Decoupling is great. And centralism hasn't scaled, doesn't scale. If you scale on any dimension, people, systems, clients, traffic, if you get any significant scale on any of those dimensions, this decentralized model that is the ESB, that dream world, doesn't scale. So you need to have a more differentiated model, and your workload services need to be able to interact with their clients directly. And you need to build discipline around adhering to promises, adhering to contract, instead of distrusting them and kind of taking that distrust and putting that into that centralized infrastructure. Yes, there's chaos. Yes, you have to go and trust things more. Maybe you have to go and set up some other infrastructure to get the governance right. But you can't make the central system scale. So as we get into a world where, you know, we get to web scale, even in the enterprise, as we are letting more and more consumers interact directly with our system, that ESB model, that notion of centralism, doesn't work anymore. And that is why you don't have an ESB product from Microsoft. We have Windows Azure, which is broad infrastructure, where you can go and pick your services, and where we help you building an architectures, with pieces like Service Bus and SignalR and ASP.NET and web roles and the websites, which allow you to go and scale up and build your own gateways and build independent autonomous services that actually adhere to the principles, autonomy principles of service orientation. So that's what I have for today, and I hope you enjoyed that. If you have any comments, criticism, if you think I'm crazy, if you want to yell at me, you can certainly do that. Down here on the blog in the comments, or also you can find me on Twitter @ClemensV, and so keep it coming. Thank you very much.